from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the battle raging in Wisconsin at the State House in Madison with tens of thousands of protesters is all about opposition to a bill that would compel public employees to pay into their pension funds and health care coverage and lose their collective bargaining rights. Perceived by opponents as anti-union legislation, the Republican governor and Republican state legislators argue that the bill is financially necessary to cut costs and avoid layoffs. We'll host debate on the issues in the hour ahead, and we'll discuss the relevance of what is taking place in Wisconsin to the nation and to California. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Collective bargaining for state workers was pioneered in the state of Wisconsin back in the 1960s, and Wisconsin is the birthplace of unions representing all non-federal employees. Now we have witnessed tens of thousands out in the streets in Madison, the Badger State Capitol, protesting a bill introduced by Republican Governor Scott Walker to end collective bargaining for state, local, and county workers except police, firefighters, and state patrol. The bill also calls for public employees to pay half the cost of their pensions and a portion of their health care costs. Democratic legislators required for a quorum to vote on the bill disappeared in protest, and President Obama called the proposed legislation, quote, an assault on unions, end quote. A national prairie fire appears to be at work, with a similar crisis looming in many other states as battle lines are drawn, and a bill similar to Governor Walker's, including opposition to collective bargaining, has been introduced in Minnesota and is at the ready in Indiana and presently is being considered in other states with Republican leadership. The battle in Wisconsin has enormous national political implications, and we want to discuss what it all means in this morning's opening Forum Hour. Before I introduce the guests that we have with us for the hour, I want to go to Madison. Jason Stein is there. He's a Capitol reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is at the Capitol Press Room, which overlooks the rotunda, and he can hear the drumming of the protesters. Jason Stein, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning. Well, first of all, what does it look like out there with teachers essentially told to go back to their classrooms? They were out a lot of last week in terms of just the crowds themselves.
Well, in Madison, teachers are still out today. They're coming back tomorrow, but they are off today. State workers have also had a previously scheduled furlough day because of the budget crisis. So many of them are also off today. So there's certainly the possibility that today's rallies will reach some of the levels of last week. So far, it has not. But by any normal standards at the State House, it's still a pretty big raucous rally.
Yeah, it's a little nostalgic for those of us who were there in the late 60s, but it's a very different kind of protest. In fact, it's a very gentle and appears to be a very peaceful protest at this point, does it not?
It has been. It has been, quite peaceful. There was a lot of concerns that there was going to be a Tea Party rally on Saturday. Estimates there range from 50 to 70,000, the official estimates of the crowd size of the two groups put together. The union group was larger, and there was, I think, ultimately no arrests that day and no major incidents reported. So, everybody breathed a sigh of relief.
What, as a reporter, have you been able to glean about the ongoing situation? There's talk about possibly some Republicans giving way. There's talk about Democrats staying MIA and not appearing for the required quorum. What do you hear?
Well, both sides have got some pressure points that they can exploit. The Republicans, although they don't have a quorum to pass financial bills like a budget repair bill, like this bill, they do have a quorum to pass other non-financial bills. So they, in just a few minutes, will be voting to put up a calendar to go in on Tuesday with some real modest, non-controversial bills. But I think you could take that as a shot across the bow for Democrats to say, look, if you're not coming in, we have the ability to do some bills that you are going to care about. Democrats, on the other side, have the fact that a major part of this bill is a refinancing of state debt, that the bill needs to be passed by Friday or Saturday at the latest, we're told, for that refinancing to be able to go through. So if that doesn't happen, then there's a new budget hole, And the Walker administration and Republicans in the legislature would have to look at other things to cut it, like cutting health programs for the poor or layoffs or other things that might be, you know, politically less popular. So.
Well, one final question, and we're talking to Jason Stein, who's a Capitol reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who is in Madison, and that is, I understand the union has pretty much conceded that they'll go along with, well, the pension, and the proposal as far as the pension is concerned and as far as health care is concerned, but it's collective bargaining now that represents the major impasse.
That's right. That's right. Both the local, state and local union workers and the state's large teacher union, their leaders have said that we're taking that off the table. We're willing to do that. And it's only the collective bargaining provisions that are in the bill, such as essentially making for public employees Wisconsin a right-to-work state, provisions like that that they want to debate. The governor continues to argue, including this morning, that those provisions are for him financial provisions that he feels are necessary to run government efficiently over the long term. So both sides have, in spite of these pressure points I just mentioned, both sides are sticking very firm in their opposition on this bargaining rights issues.
Jason Stein, we appreciate very much your being with us this morning on Forum. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Jason Stein, again, Capitol reporter, joined us from Madison. He's with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And let me tell you who's joining us for the hour to continue talking about the issue in Madison and beyond, the issues as they're shaping up. Harley Shaken is professor of geography at UC Berkeley, who specializes in labor issues. And Professor Shaken, good to have you back with us on Forum. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's very nice to be here.
And we want to say good morning also to Stephen Greenhut, who is author of Plunder, How Public Employee Unions Are Raiding Treasuries, Controlling Our Lives, and Bankrupting the Nation. He's director of the Journalism Center of the Pacific Research Institute, a conservative think tank, and joins us from the state capitol in Sacramento. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Let me begin, if I may, with Harley Shaken. This is pretty much, as far as, labor people are concerned, a battle against the public sector unions. And really, as the unions continue to decline, a way of scapegoating public employees. Is this really a target against unions, as you see it?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any other way to explain it right now. I think President Obama was right on the money when he said it's an assault on unions. And the reality today is it's really union busting parading as budget cutting. And the issue is ultimately real damage to a democratic society, not diminishing the deficit, as real as that is. And I say that because the initial reason we're talking about this was, in fact, some very tough measures the governor proposed in terms of cuts to benefits for state workers. The state workers' unions and the Democrats in the Senate in Wisconsin have accepted those cuts, which amount to about 8% of workers' salaries. So they've taken the issue off the table of the fiscal dimension. The only issue that's on the table is whether we have unions in the public sector. And that's not simply an attack against Wisconsin unions. That's something that goes to the heart of the U.S. labor movement today, in that more than half of unionized workers in the United States are, in fact, in the public sector. So why this is so important in getting so much national attention is it's really a moment where the future of labor is at stake, and the role of labor in a democratic society is something we've grown to accept over the last half century.
Well, I was looking, in fact, at a Harvard study, Elaine Bernard, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which shows back in 1973, 1 in 4 were private sector workers who were unionized. Now it's 1 in 13. But the same figures, 1973, 1 in 4 public employees were unionized, and now it's 1 in 3. And there's been also this tremendous decline in public support of unions, down to about 41%. And what you're hearing from many of those, well, on the conservative side, particularly perhaps instilled with this fervor of conservatism that we saw in the last election, is here's the public employee stealing from the private taxpayers, or from our taxpayer money.
Well, I think that's greatly exaggerated, and I think what many people are missing right now, and there's still sizable support for unions, is the contribution unions make to the lives and livelihood of non-union workers, whether in the public or in the private sector. Unions have pioneered so many things that we take for granted, from paid benefits to pensions to middle-class wages. And in terms of Wisconsin, I think this has been way overblown. For example, the median salary of a firefighter in Wisconsin is $33,000. The median salary of a high school teacher in Wisconsin is $49,000. These are not extraordinary wages. These are not wages that are driving us into bankruptcy. When we compare that to the fact that last year the top 26 hedge fund managers averaged $1 billion each, we get some sense that inequality is a problem, but it's not a result of public workers.
And again, Harley Shaken is professor at UC Berkeley, specializing in labor issues. Stephen Greenhut is author of Plunder, How Public Employee Unions Are Raiding Treasuries, Controlling Our Lives, and Bankrupting the Nation. Quite an indictment right in that title, Steve Greenhut.
Very subtly. I always say the subtly titled Plunder.
Well, couldn't Governor Walker, for example, deal with the pension and benefit issues without destroying collective bargaining?
Well, collective bargaining is the heart of the problem. And the professor kind of, you know, here in California, and I reported for the Orange County Register for a long time as a columnist and editorial writer. And firefighters in Orange County and most of the state get benefit packages of about pay and benefit packages of about $175,000 a year. That's why you have, you know, 20,000 people showing up at the Qualcomm Stadium or wherever when they have openings. We have massive unfunded liabilities. I mean, Stanford University pegged that at $500 billion. It's the debt for these payments, and what we're getting is a depletion of public services, because when you have these mass amounts of money that have to go to pensions and healthcare, employee retiree healthcare is even a bigger problem. Something has to come from somewhere. That's why Jeff Adachi over in San Francisco, the public defender, a progressive, had authored, you know, Proposition B, which failed, but the idea was to boost the contributions for public employees so that other services. That was his argument, and that's the progressive argument for fixing this situation. And when I was reporting on these issues, what I found was accountability issues suffer because of the unions, and this is the. This is the role of collective bargaining. We lost. We lose openness whenever there's allegations of abuse among deputies, for instance. The unions cover up for even the worst actors. It's impossible. The LA Times had done a great front page series on how impossible it is to get rid of incompetent teachers in LA Unified. That's because of unionization and collective bargaining. In the government sector, employees already have civil service protections, and the whole nature of the civil service is that you basically own your job, and then you throw collective bargaining on top of that, and it becomes nearly impossible to get any sort of reforms, let alone get the budget under control. And what happens is the programs that benefit the poor, they're the ones that get slashed. And just by the way, I'm a libertarian. I'm not a conservative. I think that these I'm very concerned about civil liberties issues and the impact of public employee unionization on civil liberties issues. And so, you know, that's why collective bargaining, it's not just like busting unions. I mean, why do we have unions in a public sector where there already are civil service protections? And I think the governor there is going at the core of what's making reform so difficult. And we're going to have to reform these public services before we go over the financial cliff.
Well, you've raised a number of issues, but the first one you raised has to do simply with revenue. And we heard from Professor Shaken that this is really just using the budget as a kind of shield. What about, you talked about progressives, what about what progressives, Jeff Adachi and so forth, there are also many on the progressive side of the political spectrum are saying what we really need for more revenue is higher tax rates on the rich, and we need the unions to, frankly, counterbalance corporate power.
Are you talking to me?
I'm going back to this.
Well, corporate power, I mean, in the public sector, I mean, come on, that they always go to the unions supporters comparing themselves to these corporate managers who, you know, that's private money. I think there are a lot of abuses there, a completely different issue. But the point is, the public is paying for these salaries, and the promises and the pension benefits are ridiculous, and the abuses. I mean, the Sacramento Bee, they argued recently, and it's not a conservative newspaper by any means, argued that counties are becoming pension providers that provide government services on the side. I mean, that's pretty damning. We're just running out of money here, and these pension plans and the abuses on them. The L.A. Times just reported that more than 70% of firefighters in L.A. have retired with some sort of disability. There are all sorts of scams. The Bee reported that state workers are retiring almost. They're taking up to $800,000 in a single check of sick pay when they're leaving. These are the sorts of things that are unheard of in the private sector. So the public sector workers are retiring younger and younger, 3% at 50. Age 50, you can retire with 90% of your final year's pay if you're in public safety. And the categories of public safety keep expanding to things like milk inspectors and billboard inspectors. It's this one-way ratchet. So these are extraordinarily high pension benefits that are unheard of in the private sector. So the $100,000 pension club has 15,000-16,000 members in all the statewide retirement systems, and that number is growing by 40% a year. In the private sector, we're working later and later in our lives, retiring with less and less. And in the public sector, the amounts are guaranteed regardless of what the stock market does. So we're creating this two-tier system that's becoming increasingly unfair. And then you throw on the fact that in the public sector, they get higher salaries now. That didn't used to be the case, not in every category, but in many categories, and special protections that are not received in the private sector.
Let me go to Professor Shakin on this, because what we're hearing certainly here is consistent with what a lot of it's been reported about excesses and high pension benefits for public employees here in California, early retirements and the like. Harley Shakin, you know, how does this fit into your picture of things?
Well, I think Steve Greenhut is putting out a lot of anecdotes, and it's almost like saying, well, we have corruption at Enron, let's get rid of corporations, or we had a financial collapse, let's get rid of banks. It's really throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but let's look overall at the statistics. Workers in the public sector earn, including benefits, wages and benefits statistically, when you adjust for equal levels of education, age, etc., they earn less than workers in the private sector. In Wisconsin specifically, wages and benefits combined, compared to the private sector, Wisconsin workers earn 5% less. So the notion that public workers are living high off the hog is simply not borne out by any of the statistical studies we have more broadly. But there's a larger issue here. As we mentioned a moment ago, the financial issues are off the table. The unions have conceded some very tough cuts in Wisconsin. The issue at its core is whether or not public workers have collective bargaining. And it's not simply a left-right, a Republican, a Democratic issue. George Shultz, the former Secretary of State, Secretary of the Treasury, and Secretary of Labor, said free societies require independent unions. The checks and balances of having unions are vital for free societies. But immediately, you have a very conservative governor just elected in Michigan who says, and I'm quoting here, we're going to negotiate with our unions in a collective bargaining fashion to achieve goals. It's not picking fights. It's about getting people to come together and say, here are the facts, here are the common ground
solutions. Well, in fact, in statistics, forgive me, but weren't there far fewer work stoppages under collective bargaining, both before collective bargaining, as opposed to before collective bargaining?
Absolutely. The whole idea of collective bargaining, beginning of the mid-1930s with the Wagner Act, is this was a way to resolve our differences, to work together for the common good. And overwhelmingly, it's worked out that way. In the private sector and in the public sector, it is an opportunity to work together. But even though that may be the day-to-day role, there is a larger issue here. If you break unions in the public sector, if you eliminate unions in the public sector, you're eliminating more than half the labor movement. You are profoundly changing politics. You are profoundly changing the ability of workers to address their needs in the workplace and in the broader community. That's something that when it happens in other countries, we are appropriately deeply critical of. For example, in the Middle East today, it seems a long way from Madison to Cairo, but if the military government in Egypt said, we are going to ban collective bargaining, we'd have a protest from our State Department, appropriately. But that's precisely what's taking place in Wisconsin, and it's an issue of ideology rather than addressing the real problems of the state.
Well, we haven't talked about the problems in this state, though there are many pundits who seem to feel that Governor Brown, because of his, well, the role of the public sector unions played in his campaign and what he did formerly as governor before he took office again, that it's unlikely that something like this could happen here. But then there are many who are saying, well, if it's going to be a prairie fire throughout the United States, it could happen here as well. I want to get your response, though, to what we just heard from Professor Shaikh and Professor Greenwood, Steve Greenwood.
Yeah, okay, I'm a professor now. That'd be great. Just kidding. Resolving our differences amicably, I mean, that's the argument that the professor there was making is ridiculous because it just benefits one side. I mean, it's just a one-way ratchet. What's happened with collective bargaining is the unions own both sides of the bargaining table. They're able to elect our bosses. There was one California union official who bragged about that. That's the whole purpose, and I've watched this covering local government and state government. But local government, it was more shocking watching how public employees who are members of the union and are supposedly there to negotiate on behalf of city officials, on behalf of the public, are actually members of the union. It's like twist my arm for this pension increase. So this idea that it makes bargaining more amicable is ridiculous. Maybe it does, but it certainly hurts the taxpayers. And as far as these aren't anecdotes, I mean, the unfunded liabilities are the unfunded liabilities. That's a real debt. If you don't think it's a real debt, let's try not paying. And I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that it is a real debt. David Crane, the Governor Schwarzenegger's pension advisor, just had a good piece in the San Jose Mercury News over the weekend talking about the Stanford study and the unfunded liabilities. But the first dibs on the state's finances are Prop 98, followed by debt service, followed by pensions, and then all these other programs have to be cut. So this is real. This isn't anecdotes. And the formulas are the formulas. If I've watched the 2.2% of 50 go to 3% of 50, which is a 50% increase in benefits and done retroactively to the day employees start working, those are real. If you work for 30 years at a 3% of 50 formula, you will retire with 90% of your final year's pay forever and for the life of your spouse. I mean, these are real things. These are not anecdotes, and that's why cities are running out of money. So anyway, no one's saying they can't have unions, to touch on the other point the professor made. It's the collective bargaining that's the problem.
Steve, excuse me, we're coming up on a break.
Oh, okay, fine.
I'm glad I elevated you to professor. I just want to mention that he's director of the Journalism Center of the Pacific Research Institute. Harley Shaikin is professor of geography and director of the Center for Latin American Studies. We welcome your phone calls, and please feel free to join this conversation. It's centering around collective bargaining. You may want to put your own thoughts into the conversation, and your questions or comments are welcome. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786, so feel free to join us. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us. Our email address, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. When we return, we'll hear from you, our listeners. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In Madison, Wisconsin's capital, labor activists and many others are protesting a controversial piece of legislation backed by Republican Governor Scott Walker, and Democratic politicians have left the capital to block a vote on the bill. We're looking this morning at the protests and what implications they may have here in California. And I should mention that there has been candlelight vigil called for tomorrow evening in the state capitol in Sacramento in support of the solidarity with the Wisconsin workers called by the California Labor Federation. I should also mention that there will be a number of bills on the November ballot, as there were on the last ballot. Measure L in Menlo Park, for example, is all about pension reform initiative. And Vallejo now in Chapter 9 is also looking at ways to move through the kind of losses that are being incurred that are unsustainable vis-a-vis pension funds. But the real question that this Madison situation comes down to for us this morning seems to be collective bargaining. We spoke earlier with Jason Stein, Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Harley Shaken is with us, professor at UC Berkeley, who specializes in labor issues, and Stephen Greenhut. Steve Greenhut is the author of Plunder: How Public Employee Unions Are Raiding Treasuries, Controlling Our Lives, and Bankrupting the Nation. He's also director of the Journalism Center for the Pacific Research Institute, which is a conservative think tank. Steve Greenhut, here's a listener named Bill who says, it seems the Republicans want to get back at unions, which usually support the election of Democrats. Collective bargaining is just a process, and eliminating it doesn't save money.
Well, I think it would definitely save money because employers, the agencies, the taxpayers would have more ability to impose work rules, and in collective bargaining, it really makes it very difficult to make changes to how these services are performed. I mean, that's the one area that I've been frustrated with Governor Brown. I mean, I've liked some of the things he's done, like the redevelopment agency proposal, but he hasn't touched pension reform, and he hasn't been addressing how these services are currently provided. So we're getting this choice of cutting government or raising taxes, but there are so many ways, so many things we can look at, such as privatization and things that will save taxpayers money and improve services, because we know that government services often are because they're provided by workers that have very difficult to discipline or make work rule changes, we get shoddier and shoddier services. So collective bargaining, in many cases, protects the lowest common denominator.
Are taxes for the rich completely off the table for you, particularly for the 1% of those? We're talking about like the Koch brothers and so forth, who are really behind this whole thing in Wisconsin.
Well, look at. Look at what percentage of people in this state pay what percentage of taxes. I wish I had that number here, but the overwhelming majority of taxes are paid by the wealthiest, the people who create the jobs. I mean, businesses are leaving the state. I don't know why people should pay more taxes when the government sector is immune from reform. There are so many ways to improve the way we spend their current budget, and it's a large budget, and there should be ways to reform the system, and the unions are the main obstacle to reform. So if we want to raise taxes, we're just going to exacerbate the loss of jobs, and people are in many cases fleeing the state. It's a beautiful state. I'm not going anywhere, but businesses have to deal with competitive situations, and when other states are actively recruiting for businesses in California, we keep adding regulations. We have this surly union kind of movement that's in control here that resists any sort of reform. There was a proposal to reduce pensions for convicted felons, and that went nowhere. It's impossible to change anything. So in other states, I mean, we have a higher percentage of we pay like the seventh highest in education. I forget the number, but we're not getting the seventh best education system. If we were getting an education system or a bus system or whatever, the public services, if we were getting what we were paying for, it might be a different story, but we're not getting what we're paying for, and the unions are resistant to reform, and I've seen that in my coverage of problems within the jails down in Orange County, problems in the prison system. The unions resist reform, any sort of reform. They resist disciplining of misbehaving members. It's impossible to get rid of teachers who are not performing. These are union work rules are making it impossible to reform and improve our services.
Well, Harley Shaken, we have, of course, those stories like the rubber room teachers in New York, and also essentially stories that dovetail about what Stephen Greenough just said about the unions being resistant to reform, and I want to get your response to that, or that they represent a kind of political wedge. The argument goes that they require union members to pay dues, and those dues essentially ultimately support Democratic candidates. But here's a listener who says directly, he says, Harley Shaken, a denialist. This is Eric, who says, one of the reasons for the backlash against public employee unions is the dysfunctional workplace culture they all too often create or exploit. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, the Muni transit system has a culture in which employees can take a sick day whenever they feel like it. As a result, on any given day, as many as half the system's bus drivers don't show up to work. What does Professor Shaken suggest we do about this kind of problem?
Well, I think unions are not perfect institutions. Are there abuses out there? Of course there are. There are in any human institution, including democracy. But there is a larger issue here that we're losing sight of. When Steve Greenhut lays out this litany of issues, he would really like to unwind the broad consensus we have about the role of the public sector. And he wants to do it by eliminating those who disagree. So the real issue here, the issue in Wisconsin, is whether we have unions in the public sector, and because it isn't just collective bargaining. The governor wants to gut unions, for example. He would like, this legislation means that workers would vote annually as to whether or not they want a union. So this goes much beyond even the notion of unions participating in collective bargaining. The issue is eliminating them. And what we lose sight of here is that profoundly shifts our democratic society. We have unprecedented corporate money involved in politics and in the electoral process. To eliminate public sector unions is to gut the entire labor movement and to give us a profoundly different society. That goes well beyond an individual abuse here or there. Those may be real, but overall, we also have to look at the constructive role that unions are playing today. In California, six unions early on came to the table to give concessions, realizing how real the budget crisis is. And the notion that Steve Greenhut puts out there about unions being on both sides of the bargaining table is absolutely ridiculous. Many of the things he's most critical about were passed by state legislatures or Republican governors even in previous years in California and elsewhere. He's blaming all of our fiscal crisis on the unions. They are the victims of this crisis far more than anyone, not its perpetrators. So I think it's taking an attack on unions as the solution going forward, and it simply doesn't work that way, and it in fact distracts us from looking at the tough real issues that are out there. Governor Brown coming into office is making some tough decisions, but he's doing it with the interests of all Californians in mind, not simply the unions that supported him. It isn't the unions on both sides of the table. It's the governor and the unions in the state seeking a common solution that benefits the state. That's the whole goal of collective bargaining and why getting rid of it is so damaging in terms of practically how one practically runs a state, but also, as I said, ultimately it diminishes democracy in critical ways.
Let me move forward to our callers, and we'll begin, Helen, with you. Welcome to the program. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. I have been an attorney for the state of California for 24 years. And in my time with the state, I had a 4% pay cut in the mid-90s under Governor Wilson. Four years without a pay raise. I haven't had a pay raise since 2006. Did not anticipate one for several years. I have a formula for retirement that is 2% at 55, 2.5% at 63. New state employees are going to have a retirement formula that's 2% at 60. I am in favor of pension reform. I'm in favor of civil service reform. All that having been said, I find it astonishing that the top 1% of this country now has 23% of the wealth. The financial crisis was caused by bad financial practices, by the real estate industry, the financial industry, and We have gradually shifted the tax burden away from the wealthy. I don't care what the man says about the wealthy pay more of the taxes in this state. I do not believe that is true, and I'd like to see the figures that show that. And at the end of the day, public employees are being blamed for the financial problems that we have in this country, and they are not the cause of the financial problems, and they are not the ruin of the country, because if not for unions, workers in this country would not have many, many, many of the decent working conditions they have.
Well, Steve Greenout, there it is again, the idea that the unions are more victims than perpetrators, and that you're pretty much presenting, well, the antithesis of that. Maybe more anecdotally, or so the argument would go.
I'm sorry about that. Well, who doubts that California, for starters, has a deeply progressive income tax? I mean, that everyone knows that. I mean, that's the question. I'm looking at the SACB. The wealthy are paying about two-thirds of the state's income taxes. So, I mean, we have a very progressive system, so there's no question about that. We're talking about anecdotes. If that's all this is, it's one anecdote after another, but let's look at the unfunded pension liability. Let's look at why this issue is on the front burner, even in California. It's not because of people like me, my viewpoints. It's because of cities are running out of money, and programs have to be cut. And I know a lot of folks believe that all we need to do is keep raising taxes on the wealthy. But if we keep doing that, we'll keep losing businesses, and it's a cycle. I don't see that as a good solution. Now, with what the governor's doing, he has proposed some good things, but he hasn't touched the unions. And the unions spent $30 million in independent expenditures to get him elected, which is a record amount. Corporations, by the way, in the state tend to split up their money. I remember during the Gray Davis era, and I haven't checked recently, but the California Chamber of Commerce gave 90% of its money to Democrats.
So I don't want to make this into too partisan a battle, but I'm sure you would.
No, and I'm not a partisan.
No, excuse me. I was just going to say, if Meg Whitman had won rather than Jerry Brown, we would probably have be replicating, or at least attempting to replicate, what's going on in Wisconsin and California, wouldn't you say?
I don't think so. I don't think she had any courage. I mean, I didn't vote for her. I mean, we saw, I actually had more hope for Governor Brown because he's cantankerous enough and to maybe try some things. But I don't know, but who knows? But Brown, I'm very genuinely disappointed because I was at the press conference when he unveiled his budget, and those of us, the reporters there, were asking, where's the pension reform? And he says, well, it's on, check my website. Well, it needs to be in the budget, not on his campaign website. And his pension plan was actually pension reform plan was every bit as good as Meg Whitman's. It's just he's not doing anything about it. And there's the sense when he talks about shared sacrifice that he's not making his union allies deal with any sort of sacrifice at all. And his goal, and he stated it, is to increase taxes on the rest of us. And, you know, it's a high-tax state already. And,
well, he's going to increase taxes if the voters go along with it.
But he said in his state of the state that was his preference, that he thinks that he would rather do that than cut programs. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but he made it very clear that he that was what he thinks needs to happen.
All right, I want to get to some more callers here. Again, Steve Greenhut is Director of Journalism Center of the Pacific Research Institute, and our next caller is Jeffrey. Jeffrey, join us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks. Two questions. One, I don't understand. I'd like an explanation of the difference between unions and collective bargaining. I don't understand that difference. I want to say I appreciate your show, and the intelligence of your show is wonderful. And also, I think something needs to be said about unions. That my recent experience with my wife's employment, am I allowed to mention the name of a union on the air?
Probably be better not to.
Okay, well, it's a big union. Was totally ineffective in representing my wife in a recent workplace bullying situation with a local school district. And they basically just told her to go back to work. There was no recourse that we had to the union. You know, they seem to be totally in bed with the school district. And, you know, I think there's good things been done by unions, and my wife is actually very much pro-union still. But I was very frustrated at having no recourse to unions' lack of support.
That's it. I'm glad you brought that up, Jeffrey, because often one hears the anecdotes on the opposite, that the union pushes people or school boards and the like too far. I'd like to have Harley Shaken, though, take on your first question and maybe make the distinction for our listeners about unions and collective bargaining and where one begins and the other ends. Harley?
Well, they're very, very much tied together. If a union can't engage in collective bargaining, it's simply an association. It really isn't doing anything in the workplace. The core of what a union does is collective bargaining. That is to determine the wages and benefits of workers in the workplace and the conditions under which they work. And in the public sector, this affects far more than unionized workers, far more than public workers. It radiates out into the broader society. There's an old bumper sticker, unions, the folks who brought you the weekend. We forget that many of the gains we take so for granted today, from not working weekends to the 40-hour week to paid overtime, really resulted from the pressure that unions put in terms of legislation, from the gains they won at the bargaining table. But there's a larger issue here that we really haven't talked about. We're in the midst of an extraordinarily deep and painful financial crisis, despite the anemic recovery that we're that we seem to be in terms of the economic data. What this means is why we have a budget crisis in Wisconsin, California, and so many other states is because of the financial collapse and the way that spread throughout the economy, giving us our worst a downturn since the Great Depression. Unions had zero to do with that.
Well, in fact, the unions got a lot of benefits during economic good times, didn't they? I mean, former Mayor Willie Brown was stating in his column that if he had it to do all over again, he would have looked toward the future, not realizing, as he did at the time, that a lot of the concessions that were made in collective bargaining were made because the economy was flush.
Absolutely, but we can't blame unions for that. There are always two parties in any collective bargaining arrangement. Some of the benefits that unions received when times were flush came in lieu of salaries. When the stock market collapsed, the value of pension funds collapsed along with it, creating the kind of crisis and the kind of fiscal desperation we're seeing in many states today. Unions are more victims than perpetrators of that, and that larger context is essential. But when it comes down to it, the core issue is, do we have unions in a democratic society? Because to simply talk about gutting them in the public sector is really today gutting the labor movement, and that, without question, will seep into an attack on unions in the private sector as well.
Well, Harley Shaken, here's a listener named Joe who writes, and I think this gets to the pith of what many taxpayers are concerned about, or many citizens seem concerned about on the other side of the equation. He writes, isn't it part of the issue that union members are allowed to game the system, saving sick and vacation time, working exorbitant overtime their last year to raise their pension base? It seems like the negotiated pensions are fine, then abuse happens, which does not come up in the budgeting of the negotiations.
Are there abuses? Absolutely. Can they be found? They're being bargained over in many places now. Unions are union members in the public sector are also citizens and taxpayers. They are impacted on both sides of that, and I think there's a real move to address much of this, to concentrate on a constructive solution going forward, even to accept some very painful cuts. So have we seen abuses? We've seen them throughout the corporate sector. We've seen them in the labor movement. The difference is we're not talking about eliminating the corporate sector. We are talking about getting rid of unions, because that's what it comes down to. And that neglects the contribution that unions have made in a positive way. We are speaking as if there were no ever, that there was not ever managerial abuse, favoritism, inept managers, poor policies, short-sighted legislation, etc. It all gets transferred onto the backs of the unions. Were there abuses? You bet. But that's not the cause of our problems now, and getting rid of unions is not our solution.
All right, and let me go to another caller. That's you, Mark. Join us. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. A couple of things here. What we're seeing with the libertarian perspective is a 30-year effort to short-circuit the academy by flooding it with cash to generate the notion that libertarianism is a viable political option. It has never worked in practice. Second, we need an economic system that will not consign seniors to living their retirement years in refrigerator boxes, under freeways, eating pet food. Everyone has a defined benefit need for retirement security. And if our economic system can't deliver that for everyone, the solution is not to beat on labor. It's to figure out how to bring everyone else up where we can have retirement security. Social Security is not going to do it. 401ks aren't going to do it. How are we going to meet those needs? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that statement. Steve Greenwood, I know you want to respond.
A vibrant private sector is the key to wealth creation. It's not a enormous public sector. Sure, why don't we give, let's give every American a 3% of 50 retirement plan. I mean, we can't even afford our Social Security system, which is a giant Ponzi scheme. So that sounds good. I mean, Treasurer Bill Lockyer at one panel where he denied that there was much of a pension problem said, well, the real problems, just like that caller said, is we need to bring up the retirements for everybody else. Well, great. The key to that is through a vibrant private sector. But, you know, the problem, going back to what the professor was saying, is in the public sector, in the private sector abuses that he points to, they usually get fixed pretty quickly. In the public sector, these problems go on and on. I mean, look at these school systems, these union-dominated school systems that never get better. That's why a lot of folks, a lot of liberal Democrats, like the Los Angeles mayor, Villaraigosa, has talked about the school problem. This is closely tied to the union problem. Is the new civil rights battle of our era because of the way unions, and he pointed to the union specifically as restricting any sort of reform. So in the public sector, these problems go on and on, where in the private sector, yeah, you find these corporate malfeasance and, you know, they get fixed pretty quickly. And now during the good times, though, going back to another point, during the good times, I saw it. I watched it at the local level. The unions came and said, you have these huge surpluses. Give us more money. And they got pension increases, and they got them retroactively in most cases that are unsustainable based on rates of return that nobody expected could go on forever. And then we have there's a downturn, and the advocates for unionization and for these public sector union dominated deals say, well, you know, it's just the fault of the private sector. There's a downturn. Well, economies go up and down, and in the private sector, we get defined contribution plans, not defined benefit plans. So when things go up, we get more. And when they go down, we get less.
Well, that brings up another question from a listener. And maybe, Harley Shaken, you can answer this. Because we now are looking at 40 states with budget shortfalls, talking about layoffs and furloughs, or talking about cuts, trying to decide what to do about what is clearly unsustainable. And James, one of our listeners, says, was any city, county, or state in the nation smart enough to avoid or resolve this problem long ago so now they don't have a pension crisis?
Oh, well, there are certainly areas where the pension crisis is less severe, but the collapse of the stock market, which happened on Wall Street as the cause, was far deeper and more rapid than virtually anyone had projected. But we're really missing, I think, two things here. One, let me reiterate. Overall, public workers, when you combine their salaries and their pensions and all benefits, earn less than comparable workers in the private sector. There's not something out of control here. And second, what we are putting on the chopping block is what we used to call the middle class, because these kinds of defined needs that all of us have, the kinds of dreams that we have to send our kids to college, to retire with some security, unions were instrumental in achieving. So we're talking about the debate of the moment has gotten that anything that resembles a middle-class lifestyle has become the target. I think that is extremely misguided. And if we wanted to attract good workers to the public sector, we need to pay comparable salaries and benefits. We are in the midst of a horrendous fiscal crisis. That's going to require a lot of pain to address, but collective bargaining is a vital part of addressing that. There'll be heated moments, but they ought to be at the bargaining table, not in a general collapse in the society, which would come out of some of the things that are being proposed right now. So unions are very much part of the solution. And I would also point out that at the period of greatest economic growth in our country in a post-World War II period, was the point of maximum unionization, where one out of every three workers was in a union. How do we explain that? Because I think one of the central unheralded dimensions of organized labor has been to translate rapid productivity growth into wages that created the middle class.
Well, here's a listener.
The middle class, we've got problems.
I was just going to say, here's a listener named Charles who says, because we've been talking a lot about the pay of public employees, your guests go round and round about whether public workers are overpaid. They are missing the essential inquiry. What is the turnover rate in those jobs? If the turnover rate is very low compared to overall rates, then those jobs are overcompensated. If the turnover rate is the same as elsewhere, then those jobs are fairly compensated. I want to go to another caller. Jose, thank you for waiting. Join us here.
Thank you for letting me speak. First, I would just like to say very quickly that I cannot name, of course, my employer, because a loyalty oath would get me in quite a bit of trouble. So that in itself is a statement. What I wanted to say about one subject, although I refute many of them, is this issue of you can't fire someone. You can't remove someone from their job, especially in a federal or state or local government union. And that is completely incorrect. I know from my union, which is one of the largest in the country, and that is, if management follows its procedures, if management follows the laws and regulations that it's obligated to pursue, it can remove any individual at once if it violates those laws and procedures. These union stewards, the officers, all that they defend are the contractual rights of the employee, that the management follow those rights. And just as a very quick example, I had two people who were removed by management immediately from their job, which they should not have done. That was one contractual violation. And the second one was the charges they brought against them. They had the wrong people.
All right, Jose gets the final word here because we're flat out of time. But it has certainly been an engaging and, I certainly hope, illuminating discussion and debate. I want to thank our guest, Jason Stein, first of all, Capital reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who joined us earlier, and our two major guests for the hour, Harley Shaken, who's professor at UC Berkeley, specializing in labor issues, and Steve Greenutt, who is director of Journalism Center for the Pacific Research Institute. And once again, the title of his book is Plunder: How Public Employee Unions Are Raiding Treasuries, Controlling Our Lives, and Bankrupting the Nation. That's with Forum Press. Thank you for being with Forum here this morning. Nothing to do with Forum Press. Our thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Amy Machado. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.